Hi, everyone. I'm Abby Berger. Welcome to Let's Rethink This. I'm really excited about our guest this week. Julie Tang is a longtime supporter of Independence Center and founder of an organization called Starting the Conversation, which is focused on raising mentally fit children. Since her retirement from the federal government, she has worked more closely with Starting the Conversation to build its impact and reach in the community. She's also currently pursuing her master's of social work at the Brown School at Washington University in St. Louis. Today, we're talking to Julie about how the organization got its start, why it's so important to educate and support children and their caregivers, and what the future of the organization looks like. So, Julie, thank you so much for being here today. I'm excited to talk to you.
Hi, Abby. Thanks for having me.
So I'd love to just kind of start off learning a little bit more about you. I know I mentioned in the introduction that you are one of the main founders of this organization, that you're currently pursuing your master's in social work, but I want to know a little bit further back. You know, what initially got you connected and interested in mental health?
Yeah, sure. Actually, my background is in the law. I'm an attorney, and I worked, as you mentioned, I worked for the government for many, many years. But the way I got involved with this, really, I'm a parent. I have four kids. They're all adults now, and they're all, you know, just wonderful kids and very proud of them. I'm also a grandmother now. I have one grandchild. But through the years, you know, I think all families go through this. We had some challenges with the kids. One in particular had had some struggles with mental health. And so it was really the experience of that as a parent and looking back at my level of awareness and understanding of mental health issues was what got me involved in this issue.
When you first got involved with Starting the Conversation, I guess let's back up and talk about Starting the Conversation. So how did you kind of start this whole thing off?
So I was at a point where we had gone through so many years of struggling and learning about mental health issues. And I looked back and it actually started with a conversation with my friend, Kate Tansey, who, you know, was involved with Independence Center. And that's how I got to know her. And I was just talking to her and I said, how is it that we don't talk about mental health? It's so prevalent with kids. I didn't learn about it. I just said, there is a gap here. There's a need. And she said, yes, let's do something about it. So that's how we got started. We really were involved with many people from Independence Center, people on the board. My husband, Mark Eggert, at the time was on the board for Independence Center. So we gathered a group of people who were all actually affiliated with Independence Center in some way and had expertise in all different fields. And we just started brainstorming, how can we address this issue sort of on the front end, helping kids when they're small, helping parents navigate these issues and prepare themselves for these issues and be proactive. So that's how it got started. It's just this very small grassroots initiative among people from Independence Center. And then we just started thinking, how can we do this? And that's how we came up with the program and the name for the organization, Starting the Conversation.
And it really is a start of a conversation. And I think it's great to look at kids because you learn so much as a child. You learn how to cope with the negative emotions, to cope with conflict, to cope with all of these different obstacles that, you know, you face either in school or at home or whatever it is. So I think that's a really great place to start in terms of talking to kids and their parents, their caregivers. So what did it first look like when it was really that grassroots beginning? You know, were you going out and doing presentations or were you just having these casual conversations? What did that look like?
So the way it started, it was many sessions of this group getting together and trying to figure out what was the best way to address this issue. An interesting story, one day a group of us were actually over at Kate's place, and we were sitting around her living room, and I think it was mostly women. A lot of us were sharing stories about our own kids and what we went through and our experiences. And it was a very enlightening, powerful conversation. And we realized this is what we need to do. The real stories from people who have had these experiences and the lessons that are learned from those experiences can be very impactful and really reach people. And I think so for parents to hear these stories from other parents, we found to be a very meaningful way of getting our message across. And also with those meetings, we started to identify the needs. We felt that parents and other caregivers needed to be better educated. We also felt like, of course, just having conversations in the families are so critical. And as you mentioned, kids, that's the time where it's most impactful to intervene, right? To start early. I think a lot of research shows that the earlier you reach kids on these mental health issues, the better the outcomes. So research also shows that there's typically a pretty long delay between when symptoms first show up with kids and when they're getting treatment or there's some sort of intervention. So that's a gap that needs to be closed. And then another need that we had identified was helping people access resources and connecting people with resources, particularly affordable resources, resources that they can access in a timely manner. So those were the three basic needs that we had identified in our conversations. And then we had that very sort of light bulb moment when we said, this is how we need to do it with this conversation format. And it just from there, we developed the format for our program. And then we started putting it on. We've done it in many different types of venues, including schools and churches, civic organizations. And then, of course, during the pandemic, we've been doing our presentations on Zoom, doing it in a virtual format.
So do you think that there's such a delay in getting care for younger kids because there's not conversation and or because caregivers don't know to identify signs and symptoms of a struggling child, or is it something else?
I think it's just a whole variety of factors. Some of what you mentioned, sometimes parents really don't understand what's going on, or they don't recognize the significance. They don't know how to talk to their kids about mental health. And I think stigma affects not just the person who may be experiencing a mental health challenge, but also family members. I know as a parent, I just really didn't have all the tools that I needed to be able to make the quickest, best decisions. But fortunately, my husband was very understanding about these issues. And he immediately recognized when we had issues come up. So this is something that we need to address right away. And then also, I think it's just, I think it's sort of a societal issue that we just don't right now have the capacity to deal with these issues in as timely a manner as they need to be addressed. Although I do think it's getting better.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. And I think definitely over the past 18 months or so during the pandemic, it's really kind of shifted the conversation and in a beneficial way for mental health organizations and a beneficial way for just everyone, adults, children, adolescents, everyone to be more open and share their concerns about what is going on, because we've all kind of felt that instability of changing routines, changing landscapes of our work environment, our school environment, not having the stability every day knowing what you're walking into. And so I think that's changed a little bit. What do you think? Do you agree? Do you see that shift happening in your conversations over Zoom?
I totally agree with you. We started this work in 2015, and I think things have changed quite a lot since then. Two things that I would highlight in the recent months. One is the pandemic has really put a strain on families and kids. And so there's a lot of attention. I think also the fact that many celebrities have come forward and talked about their own struggles, which has really sort of normalized this issue. That's been, I think, significant. I think parents are really wanting to know more about how to address these issues nowadays. So I think has been quite a big shift recently.
So in your panel setup, you know, when you host these discussions, these conversations, it's a panel of speakers. And then are you answering specific questions for the audience, or are you kind of coming in with, this is the format, these are the things that we want to talk about? What does that look like from a planning perspective?
Sure. I'll just sort of describe the basic format for you. We always try to create a panel of parents and other caregivers. There's usually three or four parents on the panel. So in our presentations, we always try to present a diverse panel. And what I mean by diverse panel is two things. One, we try to present experiences and maybe stories from the panelists that vary. And also we try to present a panel that is itself diverse, so that there, you know, people can identify with people on the panel. We also think about our audience and the location where we're presenting. So trying to make sure we have people who reflect the local community. We don't have, for the conversation amongst the parents, it's not scripted. They're just having a conversation. They're telling their stories. And wherever the conversation goes, we kind of let it flow. We always have a moderator to direct the conversation. We also have, at the very beginning, we have an introduction where we introduce some concepts for the audience. For example, and this is changing, but there is a misperception among some people that mental illness is something sort of two-dimensional. Either you have a mental illness or you don't. And what we try to convey to people is that mental health is very complex and multidimensional. And that's why it's so important to focus on how do we optimize the mental health and mental fitness of our kids, because there's so many ways that mental health issues can arise and also be resolved. We also include on our panel a mental health professional, an expert, and that's usually a child psychiatrist. And that person can weigh in when there's questions where you need some more expertise. At the end of the conversation, we have a Q&A session, and we provide audience members an opportunity either to stand up and ask their question, and surprisingly, a lot of them do, but we also give them an opportunity to ask their questions anonymously. So that could be, you know, writing a question on an index card and passing it to somebody to read it to the panel. So that's basically the format, and then after that part, we also have the panel members stay around so people can ask questions one-on-one if they want to do that. And then sort of alongside the presentation, we have representatives of agencies that provide free or low-cost resources in the community. They come, they set up tables, we call them resource tables, and they're usually sort of in the back of the room or somewhere in the area where people can go from table to table and learn about these low cost and free resources in the community and how to access them and what they provide. So there's several components of our format.
And can you talk a little bit more about the audience that's coming to actually listen to these presentations? You know, who's coming to it? Is it parents, caregivers, teachers, grandparents, yeah. even.
It's all of those. It's, I would say, mostly parents, but we get a lot of teachers, we get counselors, anybody who's in a position either currently or maybe in the future to take care of kids, they would be interested in what we're, the information we're providing. We just get a variety of people, but I would say mostly it's parents.
I guess it kind of along those lines, too, this started as a grassroots project, you know, having these conversations, going out to these different locations. And it sounds like you've really grown the organization quite a bit since its inception. How have you been able to grow it so much?
Yeah, so we had our first event in the spring of 2016. We were, you know, we had a committee, all volunteers. Everybody who's worked on this or with this organization has been a volunteer. We had a very committed group of people who were reaching out to schools, churches, all sorts of places, and just asking. We also come to workplaces. Would this be of interest to you? We've always had many, many organizations and venues being interested. So that's never been a problem for us. In terms of getting an audience, sometimes we get 20 people, sometimes we get over 100 people. We never really know, but it doesn't really matter to us because we feel like even if we just help one person, that makes it worth it. I don't know. Did I answer your question fully?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's interesting to kind of see it started in 2016. You've reached out to all of these organizations. You've really gotten connected in the community. And now you are launching a really cool new partnership that I want to talk more about. So can you share more about that new partnership?
Sure. Yeah, this is something that we're really excited about. Last year during the pandemic, of course, we had to go to virtual presentations. Around the same time, I started talking with the YMCA, the local branch where I am in Chesterfield, and they were very interested in hosting one of our presentations. Of course, we ended up having to do it virtually, but through that, we developed a relationship with the YMCA. And it turned out that the larger organization, the Gateway Region YMCA, which covers the whole St. Louis region, they were already starting to think about expanding into mental health programming. And so it just was a very nice fit for us to collaborate with them. Then last year, actually, this was an idea that sort of came to me during one of my classes on organizations. The teacher was talking about how nonprofits can should think about how to be most effective and efficient. And one of those ways is by merging, either, you know, joining organizations that are doing similar work, or maybe a smaller organization working with a larger organization that can scale up their programming. And of course, that was what we needed to do. So I approached the people at the YMCA and suggested this idea of a merger. And they were happy to, you know, pursue that idea. We had been already collaborating in a very effective and, you know, just a very friendly way. I think there was a real, just a really good fit there between what we were doing and what they were looking to do. So that started last spring. We've been working on it through the summer. And as of really just this week, this absorption of starting the conversation by the Gateway Region YMCA is now complete. So we're really excited about that. If you look on our website, you can see that it now links to the YMCA's website, and they're starting to build out the whole programming within their organization. Some of the things that we've discussed is, for me, it was important to keep the name, to keep the format, you know, maybe the logo and other things. You know, I asked them, these are things that we've really carefully developed, particularly the format and the idea of parents sharing their stories and the personal experiences. So they have completely honored that. And they've also committed to do at least 4 events per year. And they'll continue to work in partnership and collaboration with local, school districts, agencies, hospitals, or whatever, local organizations or venues that it makes sense for whatever location they're presenting in. They have, their geographic range is from all the way from way out west, like Franklin County area, to the east in Illinois, North County, South County. So they can reach a very broad geographic area.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize kind of the breadth of what the YMCA does. You know, it's not just a place to go work out. It really is very community oriented. They do a lot of advocacy work. They do a lot of education work. So this is really cool that they are, that you guys have merged and now have the strength of the YMCA behind you, because that is a really large organization in St. Louis. It touches a lot of different geographic areas, as you mentioned. And so the reach just has a lot of potential. So that's really, really exciting.
Yeah, that's so true. The YMCA, some people think of it as just a place to go to work out, but it is so much more. And historically, they've always talked about mind, body, spirit, that triangle that you see in their logo. And they focus on wellness in a holistic way. And they, one thing that I love about the Y is they work with all ages, from older adults all the way to small children, and they really are family oriented. So it's a really good fit to focus on this idea of helping parents and other caregivers of children.
Definitely. So with this merger with the YMCA, does that mean that all of the presentations are going to be at the YMCA now, or are they still committed to kind of going out into the community?
I think it'll depend on we'll just plan sort of case by case. So the first event is going to be at the Chesterfield YMCA, which has a very nice auditorium for this sort of thing. I think a lot of it depends on finding the best space, but they'll for sure always partner with local school districts and churches and whoever has an interest in being a part of the event.
So moving forward for the organization, is there talk of expansion outside of St. Louis and growing it to be larger in its impact even outside of the region?
Yeah, we've definitely talked about that. One of the things we want to do is create a toolkit that can be used anywhere. It doesn't have to be in the St. Louis area. I think for the next year or so, probably the focus will be largely on reaching all the different areas of the St. Louis region. For example, we had, prior to this merger with the YMCA, we just never were able to reach into the rural areas of Missouri. And I think there's a great need for mental health education and programming in those areas. And of course, it's going to look different in a rural area compared to what it would look like in an urban area, for example. But I think that for the next at least 6 months to 1 year, there will be a lot of focus on making sure we reach all the areas of St. Louis. But at the same time, thinking about and planning for trying to spread the word and expanding the program outside of St. Louis.
And I forgot to ask you about this earlier, but is starting the conversation and working on this project the reason you decided to pursue your master's of social work? Like, how did that come about in this time frame of working on starting the conversation, retiring from your career, and then going back to school?
Yeah, there definitely was a connection. So when I retired from my legal job, I retired with the idea that I wanted to expand and sort of ramp up what we were doing with starting the conversation. And it's interesting, people would ask me, well, what are you going to do after you retire? And I would talk about that. And one of the things I noticed is that particularly other parents would always share with me their own experience. And I started to see how much the parents actually need support. They need mental health support. And I started thinking, well, there are things that I can do beyond what I'm already doing with starting the conversation, and having this degree would help me do those things. It just would sort of make me better at what I was doing as a volunteer. So I didn't have a specific idea of exactly what I would do with this degree, but I thought, well, this will be helpful. And I wanted to do something. I didn't want to just retire and do nothing. So I wanted to start a second career. So I thought this would be a good direction to go. So that's what got me thinking about the Brown School at WashU. And that's how it happened.
Well, I think that it definitely helps expand your toolkit, you know, kind of, and understand more of the research, understand more of the science behind it too. So you're learning how to build more of a mental health organization, but you're also learning the skills to actually help with those mental health issues at the same time.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's been really interesting, the sort of dynamics that have played out. For example, just the fact that I was in a class and I'm learning about mergers, and that gave me the idea. I don't know that it would have happened had I not gone to school to get this degree. Dynamics have been very interesting. And I definitely am learning so much more about mental health and mental health issues and the research that's being done, and also all the various programs, other programs that are available in the St. Louis area. Our community is really fortunate to have so many resources available. And having WashU here with the medical school and the Brown School, there's just a lot of research and learning that's going on, and services that are being provided.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the main challenge of being in St. Louis, is there are so many resources. There are so many people out there that can help, but it's bridging that gap of these are the available resources and these are the people that need them. And how do we connect those two? And I think that it's really cool hearing about starting the conversation, you bringing in those community partners, your resource tables, and allowing people to actually get connected with providers in the community that can help and serve the people that need it. It just makes a world of difference to have that be the bridge and that connection being built between those two parties.
Right. And then another important part of it is, as parents listen to the presentation, they start to realize not only that these resources are there, but maybe they should reach out to them. We've had times where we've put on a presentation, and then the next day we learn from one of the agencies, we had a family reach out to us because they were at your presentation. And so now they're, you know, looking for help. And so for us, that is really, that just makes us all very, fulfilled that we made a connection, not just the family with the agency, but also the realization that this could make a difference in the trajectory of their child's life.
Absolutely. I think it makes a world of difference just to know that the resources are there and how to get connected. And then to actually take that step to get connected. That's all, you know, what we're all trying to do all the time with whatever it is. It's not only with mental health. Sometimes it's, you need a resource on how to go do something else, you know, and you just need that leg up or that connector to say, hey, this is how to do it. This is how to contact them. And here's an introduction. And that makes a world of difference.
It really does. And, you know, there are so many great organizations that are providing services sort of on the, I guess, maybe you could say sort of on the back end where somebody is already needing services like Independent Center. But what we were seeing is we need to focus on the front end and work with families and kids. And as I said earlier, that seemed to be a gap in what was being provided in the community and a need.
Well, I think what you guys are doing is really cool. It's very helpful to the community. It's really cool to see how it's expanded and the partnership with the YMCA. I want to ask one last question because we're kind of getting to the end of this conversation. And it is, if you could debunk one myth about mental illness or just mental health in general and caring for your mental health, what would it be?
Well, I guess to answer that question, I would start with what I would say is the truth, which is we all experience mental health challenges at some point in our lives. Really, that's sort of the normal experience. At some point, everyone is going to have a mental health challenge. And so the myth is to think that we can go through life being immune from mental health challenges. And so that sort of translates to a lesson for parents, which is, this is something we need to think about. And if we act proactively and prepare ourselves, then we're in a better position to optimize the mental health of our kids.
I think that's a really great point. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't touch on?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention also, now that the Y has taken over starting the conversation, the first event that's going to be sponsored by the Y is this one coming up at the Chesterfield YMCA. That's going to be on Tuesday, October 19th. And information about that can be found either on the Starting the Conversation website, which is still available, or on the Gateway Region YMCA website. And actually, the if somebody goes to our website, which is startingtheconvo.org, they can link to the YMCA's webpage.
Okay, great. And we'll go ahead and put that in the show notes for this episode too. So if you're listening right now and you want to get connected, you didn't have a pen to write that down, we will have it linked in our show notes so that you can get to Starting the Conversation's website, to the YMCA's website, to learn more about the event on Tuesday, October 19th. And if you want to attend, please do. You know, this is a great opportunity to learn more about mental health for you, for your children, for, you know, the people that you care for in your community. It's a great opportunity. So we will have that all linked in our show notes. Julie, thank you so much for taking the time to do this episode with me, to have this conversation. I love the work that you guys are doing. If you yourself are struggling with a mental illness or a substance use disorder, please go to our website, www.independentcenter.org, to find a list of local and national resources. We'll talk with you all next week. Thanks, Julie, for coming on.
Thanks, Abby.